Welcome to the FishExplorer.com's Fly Fishing Podcast. This is a show where we talk about everything from how to fish, where to fish, what to fish for, and whatever else we want to talk about. We will talk to the legends of fishing, guides, fishermen, and anybody else who wants to talk fishing. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Good morning, evening, afternoon, everybody. This is Tim Fishman Emery. I am broadcasting live from my offices in the great state of Colorado. You are listening to the Fishing Podcast here on FishExplorer.com. If you're just finding us on the World Wide Web, www.fishexplorer.com. We are your number one resource for fishing information in the state of Colorado. Any information on lakes you want, where to go, how to do it, how to fish it, we've got it. Rivers as well. Don't have a river system up, but that is coming. And we will be expanding into Wyoming, Nebraska, Texas, and so forth here in the next couple months. And this week's special guest here on the podcast is a gentleman that I've bumped into numerous times at fly fishing shows and stuff like that, but not really ever talked to him until recently at ISE. We got a chance to actually sit down and talk and had some great ideas and some amazing things coming down the pipes. Mr. John St. John from Hog Island Boatworks, which is a drift boat maker located in Steamboat, Colorado. Mr. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Tim.
Welcome to the show. Hey, John. Drift boats are traditionally big river type of boats. You know, you see them on the Roaring Fork, you see them on the Upper Colorado, the Snake, stuff like that. But, you know, usually we don't really see them in lakes and stuff like that. Do drift boats really go both ways, cross over both ways?
They do, depending on the lake. I like to tell folks that we're not the fastest getting across large open bodies of water. But if you're going to be able to hunt and fish and get on the prowl for fish in shallow water where you don't have to travel so far, motor so far, the drift boat makes a great tool, a great platform. We're really, really quiet. We don't draw very much water. And for sure, you have a lot of elevation in the drift boat with the rocker shape. So you're able to look down from a greater height versus a belly boat or other type of inflatables out in the lake.
John, how does somebody get into drift boat making and stuff like that? How did you get into this business?
I don't know if we have time for that today, but there is a long story I'll bore you with at some point. But the short story is when I graduated from high school in 1982, I quickly migrated to Hoback Junction, Wyoming, which is where the Hoback comes into the Snake and took off for many summers there, taking folks down the river and first in 18-foot Avons down through the whitewater stretch in the canyon and then in a small Yellowstone drifter, 14-foot drift boat, and a 14-foot raft floating and fishing and guiding in that area. And it was always, you know, as a lot of folks have a real gut reaction to drift boats, that when I saw my first drift boat, a Lavra, that came in the valley in like 1987, I had a real gut reaction to it. The shape really hit me hard, and a couple of years went by, and I had I have a brother that was involved in rotomolding, and his company had done a project for Walt Disney using similar type construction as we do for our drift boat. They built a large part of 16-foot boat that was going to go on the Titanic exhibit down in Puerto Nuevo, Mexico. And when they completed that project, they called me and thought if it was a good idea, they pursued a drift boat. And that day was a turning day for me, as they say. That was my new path was to dive into a roto-molded drift boat.
The rest is history. And when you say roto-molded, tell us what that really means.
You know, right now I put the phone to my ear. I'm holding my two hands in front of me, and what we use is a two-part mold. So say my left hand is the bottom shape of the mold, the hull shape, and then my right hand could be the top half of the mold, which would be our deck shape. And I press my two hands together, and that forms the mold, and there's an inside cavity in which our polyethylene resin is stored. and then the mold is put in a large oven, and it's rotated to distribute the resins inside the mold, and it's heated, and the resins form to the sidewalls of the mold as a result of the rotation and the heating. And all that might have sounded fancy, so the short explanation that made sense to me in the very beginning is rotomolding was developed as a manufacturing process in the early 1800s in Germany to form hollow Easter bunnies. So imagine a small little mold for an Easter bunny, and you put a little chocolate in there, and you turn it in an oven, and you form a little bunny. And that's basically what we're doing is making cakes or making shapes in an oven while rotating it.
Right. Now you know, mm-hmm. We got your boats now. Everybody knows Clack-A-Craft and those. What's the difference between the other the kind of the main boats we know about?
You know, our boat is the world's only rotomolded boat. And we've been going at it now for 6 years. I've got a little over 160 boats out there right now. And what makes our boat stand apart from any other boat, be it, you know, other plastic boats that are made in Tennessee or Colorado or other fiberglass boats or aluminum boats or wood boat, is our boat, you know, will float when it's cut in half. It floats upside down. It's a very, very durable boat, and it's a very, very quiet boat. And we did some special things to our hull shape when we were able to mold the boat. And molding a boat gives you a different part than it gives you a different shape. If you're looking at anything on your desk right now that might be molded, your camera box, your computer monitor, your coffee cup, things that are molded can have good clean curves on them. And we were able to put a good clean curve on our bottom and a good clean curve on our chine, which I think, you know, I'm partial for sure, but makes our boat track differently, stall out differently, and hold differently than other boats. You know, I think we're real good at, you know, just to sing our song a bit, real good at not hooking or coming off a line once we stick on that line.
Wow. You know, and I was telling you this story at the ISE show that I've rode rafts because I was in the Vail Valley and floated the Eagle and upper Colorado a lot, so we didn't need a lot of drift boats, but we did have a big aluminum drift boat when I got to Gore Creek, and we took that to the Green River, and I had never really rowed the drift boat, and, you know, I'm not going to say I was really good at rowing the rafts either, but I was good enough to get down the rivers in the rafts because you point your nose to danger, you pull out, and you go ahead. I was rowing down on the Green at 800 CFS, hidden literally every rock I could find or miss in that drift boat when I was doing it. What's the techniques in rowing those boats that really will help other people get to know?
Yeah, you know, the one of the first things I say when I go out on demos with folks is you're going to be pulling a lot. You see folks that are rowing rafts with fishermen or rowing drift boats, and a lot of times they look like they're just rowing back up the river. You know, they're just pulling on the oars. Mm-hmm. And what we know is that you can always pull with more force than you can push. You know, imagine doing a push-ups versus, you know, pulling back on something, trying to bend the bar. And it helps. It comes through the same way when you're in the river. So the other major rule we have, Tim, method we have for rowing is always point at danger, then pull away. Mm-hmm. So as you see that rock, you know, coming up, you're pulling away from it. But there's a process or two in between there, I guess, or a skill set, which is, you know, just becoming more comfortable with the oars and setting ferry angles and being able to read water, you know, Yeah.
Are you saying I missed one of those skill sets in there?
No, you didn't. I'm sure the people in the boat were telling you everything at once too, which is always a good time when you're fishing with your friends with other experts.
Yeah, four guides in a drift boat doesn't really make sense, does it?
No, that's always a quality time.
Hey, so let's get back to, you know, I go out and fish, you know, Quincy and Aurora and then Lone Tree and Carter and those guys. And I usually, a lot of the times I actually see a drift boat on there. I know at Lone Tree I saw one quite a few days this year and so forth. And I'm always fascinated by that, watching somebody row across the lake. What is, you know, the lakes really are a way to fish it, but it tends to be, if you don't have a trolling motor or something on it, how do you keep it from getting blown around like a sailboat?
You know, you can, there's products that they use for flats boats and things, drift anchors that are basically a sock with a hole in it. It might be a cone-shaped sock made out of nylon, and you can use those to try to hold a line as you're drifting, if you're drifting in the wind. Drift socks, drift anchors. Mm-hmm. The guy on the oars, a lot of times in the lakes when we go out, there'll be one guy rowing, you know, kind of on the hunt. And then the guy up front fishing will be, you know, saying, go left, go right, slow down. Oh, there he is. If we're out fishing for pike or carp or something, you know, where you're on the prowl. But in the lake, it can be a lot of fun, too. Rowing sets up a great troll speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times it's hard to hit a good troll speed out of a boat without pulling your flies too high or too low, or your lures too high or too low. And rowing has been known to be a great method for pulling flies or lures off of drop-offs and things along that run for several hundred yards along a bank of a lake. You know, it's like, all right, we know it's right here. You know, or you can put, you know, all your instruments in a drift boat just as well as you can a John boat or something, as far as depth finders and bottom readers and what's going on, you know, underneath you, so you can really hold your position looking at the gauges and row right down the line where the fish are.
And that brings up a good point. Drift boats, you know, are traditionally focused on fly fishermen, but reality is that any kind of fisherman or hunter, duck hunter, stuff like that can use a drift boat because the draft is so low, so small, and really makes a smart boat to use, right?
It is. We do have customers that have enjoyed duck hunting out of their boat. It's really quiet that way, and being our plastic dory, they can slide it up on the gravel bar real quick if they're going to set out decoys, and it's a great boat to be able to haul gear in for sure. And our drift boat in particular, you know, the casting braces and the pedestal seats are plug and play, so they come out in just a couple of minutes. So if you're going to go hunting or do something different, you can do it quickly.
What's one of your drift boats run?
Everything from what we call our River Ready package, which is the motor mount. You know, probably 9 out of 10 of our boats go out with a motor mount, which accepts up to a 10-horse motor. So our motor mount, anchor system, casting braces, forward and rear seating, double barrel rod storage, your hatches, your rower seat on a seat slide, fly deck gear bag, your custom boat cover, and your custom trailer for $84.50.
That's not bad. Not bad at all. Hey, you've got something coming out here sometime in the spring that hopefully will entice our listeners, because we're a bunch of lake guys. You've got a skiff coming out that you're working on right now. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, with the drift boat shape, like you had mentioned in the beginning, it's primarily a tool for the river, and we are crossing over into lakes that you know make sense for a drift boat. But to address a guy that wants to really, you know, motor a distance and use a 20 or 30 horse or 40 horse motor on a fishing boat, we've designed and are building a mold for a 16-foot skiff that has a bit of a panga shape in the front, so it's a really broad bow with a lot of room up front, and then a simple molded bench in the rear, so it can be a transom-mounted motor with, you know, we've had the prototype plane with an 8-horse motor on it, so you can put a small outboard motor and sit on a bench in the rear, and we're designing and developing a center console option where if you wanted a steering wheel and things of that nature and stand up and drive, you'd have a steering wheel option.
Is it going to have a pulling platform on the back?
There will be, you know, plug-and-play accessories. We've had some folks do garage projects with poling platforms on our drift boat, and I think we'll take the poling platform to a conclusion for the skiff. We've shown people in Florida that think it'll be a neat little boat for near shore fishing, and there'll be a little poling platform option. Then in the front, we've got a super level deck that goes all the way to the nose, so you have a real nice platform for standing up and fishing.
This sounds perfect for Colorado lakes, because a lot of us are starting to fish carp sight fisher for carp, sight fisher pike and muskie and stuff like this. This sounds like the perfect little boat where you're going to be able to really take advantage of it and not have to pay that $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 that you see out of a Florida skiff. But this sounds like the perfect boat for Colorado lakes.
It is. I think the hull price with the molded in bench in the rear, a boat that'd be ready to go with the trailer will be in that $5,500 region.
That sounds perfect. That sounds like a great thing. John, I know we talked about something else, and you're not only are you a boat builder and a fisherman, but you're forward thinking, and you really have a notion of getting more people involved in the sport, getting more people out there. And you came up with an idea called Fish It Forward. Tell me a little bit about what this whole thing is.
Okay. The origin of the idea came from a telephone call from a good friend named Don Hartman, who we call 00. And he called me and explained to me that he had an idea about how to get people outside. And he came to visit me at the ISE show, and we sketched out an idea on a piece of paper real quick about following along the lines of the movie Pay It Forward. I don't know if you're familiar with the movie Pay It Forward.
Yeah, with Kevin Spacey and that little kid.
That's right.
The Sixth Sense kid.
That's right. So the premise of it is that you do something nice, and then somebody sees you do something nice, and you have to do something nice, and it moves forward where everybody in the world is essentially doing something nice. And borrowing from that, what we're doing is an idea called Fish It Forward. And Fish It Forward will involve me taking two people fishing that otherwise wouldn't go fishing, and then I find somebody that in turn will take two people fishing. And that person in turn takes two people fishing, and he finds two people to take fishing. And I like the idea a whole lot because it doesn't involve any money, and it doesn't involve having to attend a special event or, you know, go to a special location or anything. It can be done anywhere. It can be brim fishing with a cane pole and a bobber and a cricket, or, you know, it can be fly fishing for 10-pound rainbows in a stream in Alaska. You know, long as it involves someone, you know, taking someone fishing that otherwise may not go fishing, and that can be a child, or it can be someone, you know, that's 80 years old. And, you know, I've done that a couple of times here in the last couple of years with folks that wander through our shop wanting to know what we do. And it's a real joy, and it's really cool, you know, to take someone out that otherwise isn't going to get out.
And this is a concept, and I don't know why nobody's done it before or thought about it, that really should be done in the fishing industry. And the thing I like about yours is it's not you take somebody out fishing and you make them take somebody out, because the people we're targeting are people who have never fished before and may never fish again. Who knows?
That's right.
They're just people that may be way too busy and have other lives and stuff like that, and they don't want to go fishing again, but they thought it was great. But then if you call me, and like you've already suckered me into this, because it's not a sucker.
Hey, you're my guy.
I'm the first one, so this spring I'm going to take somebody out, and I'm going to make somebody else go do this. So, you know, through Fish Explorer, I know our members will follow this, will do this. I know our members already do this, but to have something that we can really, you know, hold on to is great. And now you're going to have a website dedicated to this, right?
We do. I've got a website now called fishitforward.com, and it's registered under fishitforward.org. And we're going to have a map, ideally, of the U.S. where in the world where folks can click in and relate their experiences if they want with pictures or a couple of lines or a story or even video, you know, where that might happen. And it really hits on what you said there, Tim, where, you know, we're not so much trying to make someone buy a fishing rod or become an outdoorsman, but you just take them out once, and then that might be their neatest day of the year, you know, or the neatest day of the month, and something they'll, you know, they may come back to it in 5 years, or they may be able to take it up right away. But it's just getting folks outside and then recognizing who can be the next ambassador, who can be the next person to do it, you know, who's really going to be able to, that you know, will take the two people fishing, and then who's that person going to find that'll take the two people fishing? And, you know, hopefully we get this wildly viral situation where folks are just, you know, we're able to document or at least get our hands on folks that have done this.
Yeah, and You know, and I'm in advertising, I'm in marketing, so I always think about how we can monetize it. But in reality, after talking to you about it, I don't think there's a real reason to monetize it. We're just going to keep it viral, make it happy, and, you know, people are going to do this, and people are going to take new people fishing, and that's the key. And, you know, we're not pushing products, we're not pushing websites, will it come back and probably help us out? Yeah, because that's the way it works out, you know. Will probably people get to know you a little bit better through Hog Island? Sure. And will people get to know me through Fish Explorer? Of course. But the way that I see it happening is it's just doing a good thing for the outdoors and getting kids and people and everybody outdoors again.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we got to get people outside to have a chance at, you know, doing what we do for generations to come. We're under attack, I believe. You know, and I think that's fishing and hunting and outdoor land that we can fish and hunt on is under attack.
Yep. And this will help bring some people into this, and without any fanfare, we're just going to do it. And you know, I know the Fish Explorer guys are out there that are going to listen to this, are going to come at me and ask about it. And, you know, here's the deal. Just take somebody fishing, and, you know, try and take somebody fishing where it's easy. Don't take them, you know, you don't have to take that 10-year-old to go fish the eagle. Because that's not always the best thing. Take that 10-year-old to the local pond and let them catch a bunch of bluegill. Make it fun for these guys.
Yeah, I know as a fact, my 4-year-old and 6-year-old boys, their funnest day this past summer fishing was when they just caught like 30 little brookies, you know, on a number 14 Adams at a small little pond. You know,
right.
And all the days on the green or the Colorado or the elk or the Yampa, their favorite little place is a brookie pond where they just catch fish nonstop.
Amazing.
Why not, right?
Yeah. Well, we will have links on the website to your website, and then once you've got this thing going live, people will start seeing it. I'll write a blog about it. People will know about it more through Fish Explorer. And, you know, I know our 12,000 members will take this and embrace it. And it's just about passing this on to other people and making other people get somebody new out there. It's really a good thing, and there's no fanfare, no nothing. You know, make sure if they're over 16, you buy them a license, and that's really the most important part.
That's it.
So, John, thanks a lot. Tell us again how to get a hold of you. Where's your website? What's your phone number and stuff?
You know, we're located out there on the World Wide Web at www.hogislandboatworks.com. And we're here in Steamboat Springs. We're an open door. Folks drop in when they're in town, back and forth to the Green or the North Platte. We're located on 13th Street, just about a half a mile from the old railroad depot and the 13th Street Bridge over the Yampa. And our phone number up here in Steamboat's 970-870-1660.
Well, John, it has truly been a pleasure, and I'm glad I finally got to meet you besides just bumping shoulders at the shows, because people like you are going to help this industry grow and become better, and we'll keep the outdoors going. And when we're 60, 70 years old, people will be talking about us and fishing with us.
You got it.
So we'll talk to you again shortly, and once that site goes up, we'll write a blog about it and you know, Fish It Forward and Hog Island Boatworks. John St. John, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
John St. John. You know, sometimes they're just guys out there in this industry that you end up getting to know that really just kind of knock your socks off when you first meet him. And John is one of those guys, and I haven't known him very long. Just really met him last week, and really nice guy. I'm interested to fish out of his boat to see how they work. I've heard great things about him, and I really want to. And the skiff he's got coming out sounds like a perfect Colorado boat, so we'll keep you up to date with when that comes out. Fish It Forward thing is just one of the coolest things I've heard about in a long time. Something we've all talked about, thought about in some way, but now somebody's actually going to organize it and get it going. So when that comes out, we'll get to you know, tell you guys, and I'm sure the way I know Fish Explorer people, you'll jump on the bandwagon, you'll take somebody fishing, and we'll make it a big goal this summer. So should be a good time. Hey, got an event coming up. If you're a fly fisherman, you don't want to miss this. Whether you're you know, casual fly fishermen or really diehard, the Fly Fishing Film Festival or Film Tour is coming to town. It's coming to Grand Junction. Actually, it's coming to Fort Collins on January 28th at the Lincoln Center at 6:30 p.m. And then in Denver on January 30th at the Magnolia Theater at 44th and Tennyson. There are actually two shows. One's going to be starting at, the show starts at 5. Doors open at 4 o'clock at that one. And then the doors for the second show in Denver start at, doors open at 7:30 and the show starts at 8. So if you've never been a part of the Fly Fishing Film Tour, never gone to one of these things, you need to. They are a lot of fun. They have some great movies. There's some great socializing involved. And it's a great way to kind of get the ice broken. It's kind of a Warren Miller feel. You'll see the same guys that you see all the time at the fishing shops and shows and so forth. And it's definitely one of those things to do. So Fly Fishing Film Tour coming up this in a week and a half in both Fort Collins and Denver. I believe there's one in Colorado Springs on January 23rd. So if you get this thing early enough, this podcast early enough, you'll be able to go see that. So go check them out. When you get there, tell them Fish Explorer sent you. They'll appreciate that. You can get discounted tickets at St. Pete's Fly Shop or at Trout's in downtown Denver. And, you know, fishing right now is, you know, ice fishing still there, but I just got a report off the frying pan that said it was really spectacular, perfect this time of year, you know, with these nice days. There's not a lot of snow up in the mountains, so when that happens, fishing generally is good, but we definitely need some snow and some water, so hopefully things are going well, and things continue to go well. We will be, you know, doing all kinds of good stuff, lining up for the next month. Hopefully Wyoming will be up soon so that those people looking for Wyoming information will get it and the start the expansion project. If you have any questions or comments on the podcast or anything that Fish Explorer is doing, please contact me at tim@fishexplorer.com. And in the meantime, make sure you get out there and go fishing.